We're live and we're local. This is a Juno Afternoon for Wednesday, January 10th, 2018. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, we'll talk with Sally Schlichting and Jocelyn Clark about the upcoming Combrio concerts this weekend. We'll highlight upcoming activities sponsored by Trail Mix and the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. We'll get the details about the Black Awareness Association sponsored event for MLK Day celebration. And Midgey Moore will be here with a preview of the Wine Education Class Series. We'll also get our weekly update on Eagle Crest activities. So those interviews coming up, plus national native news and bird note, music and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Quick look at weather. Rest of today, mostly cloudy with highs around 15. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, highs in the mid-20s.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Lakota activist who opposed the Dakota Access Pipeline was invited to sit on a panel at the recent Peace Prize Forum in Norway. The gathering focused on examples of indigenous people involved in conflicts over cultural and environmental resources. Jim Kent reports.
Holy Elk Lafferty was in the camp at Cannonball, North Dakota during the months-long protest against the Dakota Access Pipeline and still has charges pending against her by Morton County. Lafferty was thrilled to be on the Oslo panel along with 1992 Nobel Peace Prize laureate Rigoberta Menchú.
It was incredible. It was a huge honor that this woman who's like a goddess in her country.
Rigoberta Menchú's country is Guatemala, where she spent decades fighting for social justice and reconciliation based on respect for the rights of indigenous people. Lafferty saw her role on the panel as a voice for those who took part in and supported the Waterer's Life movement at the Dakota Access Pipeline protest.
We also need people to know that we are not giving up, that we are holding our focus, that we are continuing. Hundreds of thousands of people globally are now carrying this courage and this inspiration and bringing it home to their community. That all they have to do is get up and do something. Anything is going to bring hope and bring goodness and bring healing for their people.
The Lakota activist adds that before Native Americans can cross the divide, the Nobel Peace Prize panel discussed, the U.S. government needs to acknowledge their sovereignty when they demand that agreements made in their treaties be honored. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Tribes and Native organizations are opposing legislation which would ratify President Trump's recent action reducing Bears Ears National Monument in Utah. A House Natural Resources Subcommittee held a hearing Tuesday in Washington, D.C. on the bill. It seeks to ratify the action, which reduces the size and replaces it with two smaller monuments. The National Congress of American Indians, the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition, and a number of tribes opposed the bill, saying it removes federal protections of artifacts and does not recognize the sovereignty of tribes. Five tribes currently suing over the reduction consider Bears Ears sacred. NCAI President Jefferson Keel says the organization will continue to support the tribe's effort to protect the sacred site and their religious freedom. Utah state and congressional leaders are backing the legislation. The U.S. Supreme Court will not take up a case involving a Massachusetts tribe and gaming. The Cape Cod Times reports the Wampanoag tribe of Gayhead can move forward with plans for a gaming hall on Martha's Vineyard after the high court this week declined to get involved in a dispute with the state and town over a gaming hall. The state and town argued a land agreement in the 1980s prohibits gaming, but the tribe says federal law overrides it. The tribe's proposed gaming facility would offer electronic and live bingo. The St. Regis Mohawk Tribe has suspended three wholesale tobacco licenses. The tribe recently completed an investigation into the improper sale and distribution of New York State-issued cigarettes between October and December 2017. According to the tribe, the investigation found three licensed vendors did not comply with the tribal approval process, which prevented local businesses from having access to major brand tobacco products. The tribe suspended the licenses and issued fines. The Navajo Times reports its publisher, Tom Arviso Jr., was arrested over the weekend for aggravated DWI in New Mexico. He reportedly was speeding when pulled over by a state police officer and failed field sobriety tests, and a breath alcohol test showed he was well over the legal limit. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
When you file online for your 2018 PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like Native America Calling. Just select KNBA-FM Kahwanek Broadcast Corporation. With your support, you can help us make a difference in our community. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guests today are Sally Schlichting, Queen of the Combrio Chamber Concert Series, I think is your official title, and also Jocelyn Clark, who plays a really interesting instrument called the
Kayagum.
And we're listening to a little bit of the track called Arctic Dreams, which is the title of the upcoming concert this Friday and Saturday. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Hey, thank you, Shelley.
All right. So, the concert series features works by Northern composers. Who would some of those composers be?
Well, on this program, we're featuring music by John Luther Adams. He's an Alaskan composer originally. Now he's kind of made the big time. And Christos Hatzis, he's Canadian-Greek. We have a Finnish composer named Risto Pulkkinen. We have the composer Marty Epstein, who's a Berklee School of Music and a longtime friend and colleague of both Jocelyn and mine, and a piece by Michael Sidney Timpson. He teaches at AY University in Seoul, Korea. And the last composer is
Hwang Byung-gi out of Seoul.
writing a beautiful piece for solo Kayagum.
And the Kayagum is a South Korean instrument?
Yes.
And how did you become proficient in that?
I won't take up our whole time with that story, but I used to play in the symphony here in Juneau and in the band, and eventually I ended up in Japan, China, and finally in Korea with these stringed zither instruments. Yeah.
Sounds interesting.
The koto is another zither.
The jung. These are all instruments we had here from 1999 to 2009, as sort of guest. So some listeners will be familiar with the group of Asian zithers that we've had in Juneau, but this Kayagum is the Korean version of it.
Yeah, if you ever attended any of the Cross Sound new music concerts back in the 1999 to about 2010, then you would have heard one of these instruments.
And what exactly is a zither? How would you describe that instrument?
A zither is a board with movable bridges, and there's strings stretched over those movable bridges. So it's a little bit like a harp or like a lap harp, but you pluck with your right hand, and on the left hand you can manipulate the strings, so you can bend up, bend down, make wide vibratos, and much more ornamentation than you can do with a harp.
That just sounds so interesting.
Yeah. We have silk strings, which is a little bit different than Western instruments.
Are they easier on the fingers?
No, they make your fingers bleed.
And you're also playing the ajing.
I'm playing the ajing in this concert. I'm not an ajing player, but one of the pieces was written in the key of C. We normally play in the key of F, so the whole instrument needs to be tuned down. So I just changed instruments. And it's like the Kayagum, except for it has 8 strings, and the strings are thicker, and then we bow them. So it's a little bit like a cello, but much sort of grittier sounding than the
kind
cello.
Kind of like an R a little bit. I know you don't like that.
Well, we'll get a chance to hear more of the Kayagum at the end of the show. We'll play a track that features that. But you two aren't the only performers in the ensemble. Who else will be playing?
Well, we're joined by our longtime friend, Lisa Evius, on violin. The three of us all grew up together playing music together in the Juneau School District. And so it's really wonderful for us to all be on a program together. And we're joined by the wonderful percussionist, Morris Balter. He's a Canadian-born percussionist, and he's based in Tucson right now, but he has really strong ties to the University of Fairbanks, where he's been on the faculty there. And so he's joining us on this program, primarily on vibraphone. Well, I'd say only on vibraphone. So
yeah.
Yeah.
This sounds like a very interesting combination.
Yeah,
of
violin, vibraphone, kahayagum, and flute.
And so. he was here in 2010. He played some concerts here with Cross Sound with when Moo Mom was here on the Peepaw.
Yeah. Now, the song selections, will they be new music or are they classic favorites or a
this
bit of both?
This is all new music. I think the oldest work is probably from the 1980s. I don't know about the one.
The Huang, I think, may also be from the 80s.
Yeah.
Maybe a little earlier. Maybe the Huang's the oldest. It's one of the earliest new music pieces for the kahayagum, so it sounds a little bit traditional.
It's interesting. Most of the composers were born around 1955 or so. And we have two world premieres on the program, the work by Michael Sidney Timpson for flute, violin, kahayagum, and vibraphone, and then a duet for flute and violin by Marty Epstein. So two new works, in addition to the works by Northern composers.
And then we also arranged a piece. We arranged a piece by John Luther Adams for sort of new instrumentation. So that's going to be a new-sounding version
new,
of the same piece.
A new version of the same piece.
Who was we? Was it the two of you or everybody?
All of us. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. That's a beautiful piece. Very atmospheric, very much of the North, you know, looking out across the tundra and the ice and the light. And you can sense that. In the piece.
Yeah, that leads me to my next question, which is what is unique about the sound of Northern composers, in your opinions?
Well, certainly with the Hatzis and the Luther Adams, they're different, but they both bring this sort of the atmosphere of this really bleak Northern landscape. The Hatzis has an Inuit singer on the backing track. So it's for flute, vibraphone, and recorded sounds, boreal owls, loons, and Inuit Aboriginal singing.
Is that some of what we heard in the
track? That's what you heard at the opening, yes.
And he also worked with Tanya Tagak later on after he wrote that piece, I think. She's really one of, I mean, she's very famous.
Yeah, she worked with the Tribe Called Red, too, last album. Yeah. And many other, amongst many other things.
And then with the Michael Sidney Timpson, you know, he's not from here. He hasn't really been here. So for him, it's sort of an imagined North. As he wrote the piece, you know, he sort of imagined how Alaska is. He thought of, you know, where we're playing it. And he also thought that the painting that he used to sort of write his piece looked like the Northern Lights to him in his own imagination. So we have people who are really based in the North and from the North writing about, you know, what they know. And then we have people imagining what it's like to be here, I think.
And she mentioned a painting, and that painting is the basis for Michael's the commission that we did from Michael. So.
And what is the painting?
The painting is a self-portrait of a Korean artist who has his back to the canvas. So it's a self-portrait of his back. it's a pastel, so it's sketchy.
Slightly abstract.
Yeah. So you've got the, you know, it's very colorful with, you know, reds and yellows and blacks, and so it's.
And the title of the piece is In Front of Him.
Thank you. I was just going to ask that so I can look it up later. Mm-hmm. Well, this is all very interesting. And the theme, Arctic Dreams, all of that seems like it inspired that as the theme, of course, in the time of year and the weather.
The time of year, yes. And just that opportunity to pull together some Northern composers.
Is it all wintry music, or could some of it be reflective of the balance of life outdoors and time spent inside, a celebration of both winter and maybe some of the glory of summer?
It's, you know, I think that I'm going to leave that up to the audience to decide what they think it is.
So, you know, music and any art is really what you bring to it yourself. So what's your expectations? If we write in the program notes, it's all about the North and about you're going to hear the North in it possibly. But if we don't say anything, people just bring their own experience with sound and, you know, titles or whatever to it themselves.
Certainly when I think about Arctic Dreams, it's all about the milieu of the northern climate in this season, but of course we don't have winter all year round, so I like those answers. Is there anything else you'd like to add about the music? We can talk a little bit about the Kyagum in just a second.
No, let's talk about the Kyagum, because I think people will be very curious about that.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just really thrilled to be home. And
where have you been?
Well, I live in South Korea at the moment, but I come home every winter. And last winter, Sally said, why don't we do a concert together? I said, okay. And, you know, Sally and Lisa and Morris, too, but especially Sally and Lisa are people that I've known since I was a kid. They're upperclassmen. I'm a lowerclassman, but always people that I looked up to, because Sally was always, you know, the best player in the band, and Lisa was always the best violinist in the.
Now she's the best Kyagum.
Now the best Kyagum player in Juneau.
Yeah. Actually, yeah.
What a lovely claim to fame.
So, you know, and when I had put Cross On together back in 1999, the idea was that I could play with people that I grew up with and play with musicians from Alaska, you know, and bring, you know, whatever I was doing to them and play with them. And so now it's sort of with what Sally's put together here, it's kind of been an extension of that dream and desire to, you know, play at home with old friends.
And
so
you do a lot of
great.
Performing also in Korea as well in the Kyagum, right?
Yeah, mostly as a soloist. So working as an ensemble is always a challenge for me, but it's but it's really great. I love doing it and not just playing by myself all the time. So that's been really wonderful. The Kyagum is a 12-string zither. It's got silk strings. It's all the imagery of the instrument is about birds. The bridges look like the wild goose feet, and on the bottom of the instrument, if you turn it upside down, you've got the sun and the moon and the universe in the middle. It's got 12 strings, one for each month of the year. You've got a whole yin and yang, heaven and earth, man in the middle theme going. It's a very philosophical instrument. And the one main difference with my instrument compared to like harps or even Japanese koto or Chinese zheng is that we stop each note before we play. It's like the Balinese gamelan where you each time you hit a note, you want to stop the other one from ringing. So there's no harmony. So it's really like singing. That's just what I like about the instrument. Each note you pluck, you're stopping the other strings from ringing. So you're just playing one note at a time without this sort of ringing, which is, you know, quite different than you would expect by just looking at the instrument. You'd think a harp and that should ring and then should have these flowing water sounds, mm-hmm. but it doesn't have it. It's very, quite grounded. But we get the sort of more ethereal stuff with flute and violin and vibraphone.
How does that work with other players of other instruments? Do they find it kind of hard to wrap their head around that concept?
Well, Korean music is all about rhythm. So we never play alone. We always play with a drum. And most of the rhythm are triple meter, which is unlike Western and also Chinese and Japanese music, which are two or four, usually in four. So 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4. And we're always 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. It's
like
kind of
dance-like.
Yeah, there's always a dance and there's rhythm patterns we play over. So there's most of the rhythm patterns are 12-beat rhythms with accents on one and the nine. They, you know, they get more and more condensed as they get faster and faster. So I'm always thrilled to play with percussionists. I'm gotten trained to work with them. So it's been great to have Morris here to sort of keep us counting in the right place.
All right. Well, we're going to hear a little bit of that in just a second. But to recap, I'm speaking with Sally Schlichting and Jocelyn Clark, and they're going to play they as well as their ensemble, have two concerts this weekend. Would you like to share the details of those performances?
Yeah. So two performances. One is Friday night at 7:30 p.m. at Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. That's downtown on 4th Street. And then Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock in the atrium of the Alaska State Museum building, and or they call it the APK now, and that's at 2 o'clock, on Saturday afternoon. So that's Friday and Saturday.
Friday and Saturday. As you can, right?
And pay as you can.
Both are pay as you can. And where can we find out more information?
You can go to our Facebook page. Just search for Combrio Chamber Series.
I found it very easily. It had a lot of information. Yeah. Everything you need is right there.
If you just type in Combrio Chamber Series in Google, a lot of stuff comes up. So, yeah.
And then coming up in February, you have another concert. Do you want to say anything about that?
Yeah. The next concert coming up on February, I think it's 23rd and 24th, is Minimalism. And that is a concert of all minimalist music. So if you're familiar with Philip Glass, He's a composer who's going to be featured on that program, as well as Terry Riley, David Lang, and a composer named Moondog, as well as Arvo Pärt. And that's going to feature William Todd Hunt on saxophone, myself on flute, and Luke Weld on piano.
So sounds great.
Great program, yeah.
All right, well, don't miss it this Friday and Saturday. Sounds like a rare opportunity to hear Jocelyn Clark on the Kayagum, as well as all the other wonderful artists and musicians playing excellent compositions about Arctic dreams. Thank you both for being here today. And now the moment you've all been waiting for, we're going to hear a little bit of Kayagum music. And Jocelyn, would you like to introduce this piece?
Sure. This is a recording of my teacher, one of my teachers, who's also a composer. His name's Hwang Byung-gi. He's also a famous Kayagum player. So he writes for his own instrument. And this is called Spring Snow. It's the second movement from Spring Snow, the sort of main melody from this longer piece.
All right. Here it comes. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. We'll be right back after this.
Join us for the annual KTOO and Taku Fisheries Seafood Festival on Saturday, February 3rd at Centennial Hall, featuring 9 Juno restaurants that will bring you Alaskan seafood at its best and dishing up their creations of halibut, salmon, rockfish, and spot prawns for you to choose from. Live music and specialty desserts will make this an extraordinary night out, benefiting your public radio station. Celebrate with us and get your tickets today at KTOO.org. This event is made possible with support from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute and Pacific Seafood Processors Association.
This is Bird Note. The peace of the vast Guyanan jungle is abruptly broken. A herd of nervous cattle? A distant motorboat? The civilizing roar of chainsaws? It's the dawn chorus of male capuchin birds, one of the most bizarre members of one of the most bizarre bird families in South America, the Catingas. Named for their tawny cinnamon plumage with a prominent neck ruff and bald head, capuchin birds gather in the treetops to display each morning and evening. The singing male bows forward, then suddenly stretches to his full length, raising a monk-like cowl of feathers around his naked blue-gray head. The display grounds, or leks, are used over and over, year after year. Some stands of ancient trees may have witnessed the spectacle for centuries. The unmistakable, apparently irresistible noise attracts the female capuchin birds, which jostle each other ruthlessly in the quest to get close to the studliest of the displaying males. That alpha male with the best singing technique will be the only one to mate. for Bird Note. I'm Mary McCann.
It is 25 minutes after the hour. You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are all here to talk about an upcoming event titled Treadwell Ditch, Past, Present, and Future. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yes. Now, could each of you please just introduce yourselves, maybe give us your title and the organization that you're representing?
I'm Allison Gillum. I'm the executive director of the Southeast Alaska Land Trust.
And a little, and then you?
I'm Jim Garrity, the local historian.
Great.
And I'm Dave Haas. I'm a secretary of the Trail Mix Board and been on that for about since 2010.
Okay. Now, this sounds like a great event. And before we get into the details, let's just talk a little bit about how it came about. So first of all, Allison, briefly, what is the Southeast Alaska Land Trust?
Yeah, so we're a nonprofit here in Juneau. Our region is all of Southeast Alaska, but we're located here in Juneau. And we're an organization that focuses on doing land conservation projects throughout the region to protect areas like trails for the public enjoyment.
And what is Trail Mix?
Trail Mix is also a nonprofit, and we work with the Forest Service, the City of Juneau, and state in terms of either renovating trails, maintaining them, and looking to very rarely do a new trail.
And Jim, what is a historian? I'm kidding. But please tell us how you got involved in this too.
Well, I've always liked trails. I was the president of Trail Mix for years, and we worked on historical projects because of the need to demonstrate what we're going to do and what was done before, like for SHPO approval and things like that. And it's something I'm really, really like and enjoy. I think most historians are really passionate about what they do and trying to get it be as accurate as possible.
And this event is basically a presentation about some history of the Treadwell mine site. And then the proceeds go to the renovation of the trail. Is that correct?
The Southeast Alaska Land Trust, we do one or two of these presentations every year as a fundraiser. And this year we decided to reach out to Trail Mix as another organization in town that has a similar mission in terms of connecting people to the outdoors and to nature and to conservation. So this year we reached out to Trail Mix, and we thought since this project is really active right now, and I think the community is really curious about what's going on out there, we thought it would be a great time to talk about the history and talk about what's going on now. So that's kind of how we came together for our two organizations. So the fundraisers for both organizations.
Okay, yeah. Great. And so the organizations are just going to be using the proceeds in general or specifically for this trail or...
In general, but bet Trail Mix might be using it for this project. I don't know if they've decided.
We'd love to just use it right for the trail work. There's a lot of renovation going on.
Cool. I have some questions about the trail renovations, but first I'd like to hear from Jim about the history of the Treadwell Mine site. What will you be covering in your talk?
Well, you always want to do some background because you can't just assume that everyone is up to date and start from, you know, the general knowledge because... So, yeah, we'd have to do some on why Juneau is here, why the Treadwell Mine was important to Juneau, and what was the purpose of the Treadwell Ditch for the industrial complex down there where the Treadwell Mines were.
Where exactly is the starting point of the trail? Like the Treadwell Mine, where is that specific? Like where in? I know it's on Douglas.
Well, the Treadwell Mine is kind of the end of the trail because water flows downhill, and so that the Treadwell Mine. Have you ever been to Sandy Beach? The sand there, and there's no natural sand there at all. All of that's been through the stamp mills. There's 1,000 stamp mills there that crushed up ore, and they were specifically targeting anything that had quartz in it. So. A lot of the sand is quite pale compared to the rock that's out there.
And then it goes all the way to Eagle Crest, 14 miles from what I understand.
Yeah. 18 miles, yeah.
18 miles. And what parts are we hoping to renovate?
Well, the whole thing, hopefully.
That's the vision?
Yeah, all the way from Eagle Crest down to Douglas, and including spur trails along the way, which make it even more attractive for people to jump on in different sections and do a short section or a long section and either level or downhill.
Are you thinking for hiking, cross-country skiing, biking, all three?
All three and more.
And more?
Yes. Probably mountain biking and, I don't know, somebody will come up with something else probably along the way, but multi-use, which is appropriate also for Forest Services, and that's part of their mission is to provide multi-use trails.
Will it be sort of graveled in, planked in, a little bit of both, depending, more, something different?
The berm itself was originally all gravel, basically blasted from the ditch, and over the years it's had various gravel added, and trestles have collapsed, and now some of it's just rock. So there are places where the trail needs to be defined where it doesn't exist now, and other places where the trails existed for you know, over 100 years but not had any maintenance. Mm-hmm. So roots need to be removed, low spots need to be cleaned out, and then gravel added where you want to harden the trail and make it, you know, usable for all those different purposes.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the interesting sites along the way on the trail or points of interest?
Well, let's see. There are several dramatic viewpoints where you've got openings. There's a, in particular, there's a couple of cliff places I'm thinking of with great overviews of Gastineau Channel. And another one in particular down where the old Douglas Snowmobile Trail meets the ditch, which gives you a great view of downtown. One of the best I've seen, which I hadn't probably seen in 30 years of living here until, you know, recently. So.
Wow.
Yeah, and some really interesting things like Lawson Creek, and, you know, that specific area. I think one of the most pertinent things about the Treadwell Ditch Trail is that there was no such thing as the Treadwell Ditch Trail. It was the Treadwell Ditch, and so it wasn't built to be a trail, and so that's made some really challenging things to upgrade that from that. You know, they built as little trail as possible. And it was just to get out there and maintain the water flow in the ditch.
Well, I could talk about hiking trails all day, but we should probably discuss the details of the fundraiser. Allison, would you like to share those?
Yeah, so the presentation is this Saturday, January 13th at 7 p.m. It's at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall. There's a suggested donation of $20. You can find out more information on our website, southeastalaskalandtrust.org, also our Facebook page, and there are posters all over town.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to hearing more about the trail and why it's important and the history behind it and why we should all support the renovation of it. Also, one of these days I'm going to do the whole thing start to finish.
Save half a day.
Thank you all for being here. Is there anything else you'd like to add today?
No, thanks for having us.
Hope people show up and find out a little bit more about one of the jewels of Juneau.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for being here, and I'm sure you're going to have a great turnout. I know the Treadwell Ditch is loved by many.
Yes.
I was walking through icy streams that took my breath away, moving slowly through westward water over glacial plains, and I walked a few. Walked off and old me, old me, oh my, I thought it was a dream, so it seemed.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD. Pick, click, give. A great and easy way to support nonprofits in Alaska. You simply donate during your PFD application process. There are dozens of nonprofits that you can support in Juneau alone, including KTOO Public Media. The application period for the PFD begins January 1st and runs through March 31st. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
The Juneau Arts and Humanities Council with KTOO Public Media present Art Glasses. Monthly, not your typical sip and paint glasses, the second Thursday of each month. January's featured artist is Jessica Hanlon of Frost and Fur. Jessica will ably guide us in creating custom hand-painted tea towels, not just one, but two tea towels, on January 11th from 5:30 to 7:30 at the Hangar Ballroom. All supplies included and no host bar. Tickets on sale now at KTOO, the Jack, and JAHC.org.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are here representing the Black Awareness Association, Sherry Patterson, president of the Black Awareness Association, and Taylor Shea with AmeriCorps. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just introduced both of you, but maybe you could each tell me a little bit about what your role is with the Black Awareness Association.
Okay. Thank you so much for inviting us to be here today. And the Black Awareness Association was organized in 1994 by several African-American residents of Juneau who were far away from home and just felt the need to come together and be a presence here in the capital city. And since that time, we are still alive, still viable, and we sponsor several cultural activities in conjunction, actually, with Bridge Builders, which I can say something about later also, and the annual Dr. Martin Luther King celebration is one of those events that we hold each year in celebration of this great American.
And what's your role with the Black Awareness Association?
Us as AmeriCorps volunteers here in Juneau are working with the Black Awareness Association to put on a donation drive. We're going to be collecting feminine products, diapers, and baby formula for the entire month of January in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day. So we will be collecting donations at the Douglas and Downtown Libraries, Foodland, Super Bear, and students can donate at JDHS.
Okay, great. We'll go over those details again. I wanted to get back to Sherry. I was wondering if you could just say a little bit more about the mission of the Black Awareness Association here in Juneau, some of the services you provide and things like that.
Well, over the years, one of the main things we have provided is we have several scholarships that we have awarded to our high school students. We sponsor a soul food dinner during the month of February, which is Black History Month. And from those proceeds, we're able to give towards higher education for our students. And we have collaborated with several cultural organizations here in town to do cultural events, mm-hmm. and they're all well received, and we enjoy doing them, and we just want Juneau to know that we're here.
Well, you came to the right place.
Yes. And before we go further, I want to shout out to my team who's listening today. Y'all get to work. They'll get me for that one.
Right after this interview. All right. Well, Martin Luther King Jr. Day is coming up this Monday, January 15th, and you're here to spread the word about the community celebration. So
yes.
Please tell the good people all about it.
It's going to be at 1 o'clock p.m. at St. Paul's Catholic Church in the Valley. And it is on Monday, the 15th, of course. And we don't have everything confirmed at the moment, but there's going to be several speakers, community leaders, local and state officials. There's going to be some musical presentations and some other dramatic presentations. And it's just going to be a good time. We always have a good time. Yeah.
And for many, Martin Luther King Day is also a day of service.
Yes.
And so in conjunction with the event, there will be the diaper drive that Taylor mentioned and mm-hmm. feminine products as well. Why did you select those items to collect for donating?
We have reached out to a couple organizations in our community and asked them what their needs are. And these were things that we saw in very high demand: diapers, baby formula, feminine products. They're all something that are not often collected in donation drives, right, and definitely in very high need.
Right. And we actually had a diaper drive last year, and it was extremely successful. So we thought we'd go that way again. I mean, and just bless those little bottoms, you know, the smallest and the most precious citizens that we have, and because they're the ones that's up and coming.
Yeah. Oh, yes, they are.
Yeah.
And does it matter what kind of diapers
just
or feminine
bring
products, just anything?
Bring them. Yeah.
And where will they be redistributed to? Or whom will they be distributed to?
We have chosen Haven House, Aware, Love, Inc., and St. Vincent de Paul's community.
That's great. Great organizations.
Yes.
Well, what a wonderful event.
Yes.
I'm very excited to hear all about it. Is
yes.
there anything else you'd like our listeners to
know
about?
Well, we would just like everyone to come out as normal, and we're going to be ready to just celebrate this great American. He is one who I have looked up to. I grew up looking up to him. I remember the day he was assassinated. It's a very personal thing to me. And Dr. King came and lived and died for the things that he believed in. And we just want to come out and celebrate and remember. And our theme this year is The Dream is Still Relevant. And we're going to be talking about that.
What inspired that choice as a theme?
We were just sitting around talking, and, you know, with so much going on in the world today and so much division and, you know, his dream is still alive. And we need to remind us of that.
Yep. We need to get closer and closer to that dream every day.
Yeah, every day. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you both for being here. And the event is Monday. What's the best place to go for more information?
We're on Facebook, the Black Awareness Association. Go to Facebook and look at our page and like us if you haven't done so already.
I just did today. I found the page very easily, and all the information I needed was there.
Thank you very much. And our email address is junobaa@gmail.com. And we do have a website, and contact us. Yep.
Sherry Patterson and Taylor Shea, thank you for being here. The Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Community Celebration, The Dream is Still Relevant, will take place Monday, January 15th, 1 p.m. at St. Paul's Catholic Church here in Juneau. It is, of course, free and open to the
Absolutely.
Public.
Absolutely. It's
bring
free.
Bring your diapers and feminine
that's
products
right.
to
bring
donate
the whole family.
And formula.
Yes.
And no doubt it will be a beautiful celebration.
Yes.
Thank you both for being
thank
here.
You
thank
so you so much.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure.
To the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walked through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots be on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
here tuned in to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. It's about 14 minutes to the top of the hour, and Jeff Reclow is here from Eagle Crest with our weekly update. Thanks for coming back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me this afternoon, Shelley.
All right. What do you got for us?
Well, you know, January is Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month. And
what does that mean?
It was a grassroots effort. I believe this is in its seventh or eighth year nationally, to just try and get people to get outside in the wintertime, learn how to ski and snowboard. Enjoy the winter outside as opposed to inside. So Eagle Crest took part in it from the beginning. And so we have a whole host of events and specials that we have going on during January for Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month, just to encourage people to come out, learn a new sport. If they already know how to ski, learn how to snowboard, and highlight just that terrain that we actually have open at Eagle Crest. So, you know, it's...
is open, I think?
Right now, we have the Porcupine Chair open. We have three runs. Muskeg, Dolly Varden, and Stickleback are all open.
And those are good for learners.
They're good for just getting back on your feet. And the snow will come. I'm confident
that it
will.
And you said the snow right that's there now is pretty good.
The snow that is there is very, very good. Yep. And we have lots of people coming up, taking advantage of the snow that we have. We're making the most of everything. We've had people learning how to ski, learning how to snowboard. Had lots of little kids and adults and all ages up playing on Porcupine this weekend. So we are on a weekend-only operation. However, this coming weekend, we will be open Saturday, Sunday, and Monday for Martin Luther King Day. And just want everyone to know that soon as possible, we are trying to get more terrain open. And nobody wants to get that terrain open more than we do, believe me.
I'm sure. Well, that's great to hear. I'm glad to hear that Porcupine is open and the snow is good. That one is definitely more my speed. And in honor of Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month, I'm going to get up and take a round of lessons. So.
Excellent. Well, yeah. Come on up. And you can find all of the information on Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month and everything Eagle Crest at skijuna.com. Just want to also say that we have rolled out the applications for our annual, it's the 36th annual Learn to Ski Weekend, and this is a free weekend for youth grades third, fourth, and fifth graders who have never skied before. So this is sponsored by Mendenhall Auto Subaru. We have a long-time relationship with them, and so we've rolled out the applications. You can find them online at skijuna.com. So if you know a third, fourth, or fifth grader who's never skied before, get them to put an application in, and they can come up at the end of the month for a great free weekend on the mountain.
Which weekend is that?
That is the last weekend of January, January 27th and 28th.
Oh, good. Well, we'll talk about that a couple more times before it comes up. That's great. I hope everyone out there who's listening has got a kiddo. We'll get them going, get them started young, because it's not easy to learn as an adult.
But you can learn as an adult. So we have many adults that are doing that. So you can find all our information at skijuno.com.
Great, Jeffrey. Well, thanks so much for being here. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, just keep doing your snow dances and know that we are really trying to get more terrain up and open as soon as possible up at Eagle Crest.
Okay, I don't see any snow in the forecast yet, so we do need those snow dances, everybody.
Keep doing them.
All right, thanks for being here.
All right, thanks, Shelley.
Oh yeah. it on down the line.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is Midgey Moore, here to talk about Sip, Savor, and Learn, a series of wine education classes. Midgey, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thank you so much. It's really great to be here.
Midgey, you wear a few different hats around town. For one, you're part of the CCTP, which stands for?
I'm a Certified Culinary Travel Professional, which I earned through the World Food Travel Association.
Wow. And you're also the owner of Juno Food Tours. What is that?
Juno Food Tours is a culinary experience that is, we have three main tours. We have our Tour with Taste, which is our flagship tour, which focuses a lot on Alaskan seafood, which we're very proud of because, you know, we don't farm fish in Alaska. So we love being able to share that information with our guests. And then I launched a new tour last year called Juno Bites and Booze, which is basically the ultimate pub crawl. Mm-hmm. And it includes really great food, lots of cool craft cocktails. We go to the Narrows, we go to Malaga Distillery, we go to the Imperial for an eagle fart, which is like a duck fart, but with vodka. And, of course, you can't go there without having the super tots. So we have a lot of fun stuff on that one. And then this year, this coming season, I'm very excited because we are partnering with Above and Beyond Alaska to offer a new tour called Taste of Nature, which is a kayaking, hiking excursion with a gourmet lunch on one of our beautiful beaches. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's a full day experience.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Well, I was going to make a joke about being hungry, but the eagle fart kind of killed my appetite.
That'll sneak up on you, but it's mighty tasty.
I have never heard about that. I learned so much doing this show. It's a good thing I came to work today. Okay. And today you're here to talk about a series of wine education classes that you've coordinated or helped to coordinate. So tell me, what is the advantage of being educated about wine?
Well, one of the things I have found, and even just I'm first to say I'm a novice about drinking wine. I mean, I love wine, just like most people. But the thing that a lot of people don't know is like how to pair it, what goes with what, but also why you like one over another one, and that it's okay to like the inexpensive wine over the expensive wine. It's not the price that matters. It's how you enjoy that wine, how you like it. And so what I wanted to do was to offer a series of education opportunities and bring in a wine expert. We have Keith Crocker, who is very well known.
He's local, too.
Yeah, and a local. And bring him in and actually give an opportunity for, and I call them my students, for the students to sit there, drink the wine, pair it with cheeses and with chocolates and nuts and different things, and find out how this red wine, like this Malbec, tastes a little bit different with this cheese compared to the Cabernet or something like that. And all these different components that make wine so enjoyable, because it's always the more you know. You know, the more you know, the more fun you have. And Keith is just a wealth of information. And so he put together the wines. He chooses all the wines. I choose the themes. We're doing French, Italian, Pacific Northwest, and then eclectic wines of the world, which is going to be a lot of fun. And through these classes, you have an opportunity to sip, you savor it, and you learn about it. And then every student also gets their own wine journal. It's a hardcover journal, comes with a pen, and that way you can track the wines. But you can also, it's small enough that you could carry it with you if you went to a wine tasting at another event or you're out at a restaurant and you just happen to have it in your bag. You go, oh my gosh, I really want to write this down. And the server will usually bring bottles out. And that way you can go, yeah, I want to be able to order this because I really liked it. And the nice thing is all the wines that we have in the classes are available locally.
Oh, that is the best part.
Yeah.
Wow, that's great. Will there be any Alaskan wines featured, like in the class about Pacific Northwest wines?
Actually, I don't know. I leave that up to Keith. I don't know of an Alaskan winery.
I think there might be one around. I feel like I've seen some bottles,
yeah,
but I can't swear to it.
You know, I don't know about that. I usually leave that up to Keith. But I also wanted to highlight that because they just had all those horrific fires. And I think a lot of times people forget about the regional wines that are in the U.S. And I think it's just a great opportunity for us to showcase our neighbors and show a little love. Yeah. And, I mean, you know, it's wine.
All right. So there's four classes in this upcoming series, one a month. I understand if you choose to sign up for all four or even just three of the four, you can make it a flight. So how does that work?
Yes. Yeah, so this is kind of something fun that I actually got feedback from the students last year was that if they could buy several at one time. And so the way I did it is that if you sign up for just one class, it's the standard $89. But if you do two classes, it's $79 per class. And if you do three or four classes, then it's $69. So it's a savings of almost $90 if you purchase all four of them. And that way, you already have your seat reserved because it is limited seating. We can only seat 20 to 25 people.
Oh, I can imagine it'll be pretty popular.
Yes, I hope so. I hope so. I hope that people enjoy learning about wines and not just drinking it, which I truly enjoy myself, but also learning about pairing it and having an opportunity to taste it with different things.
And you've taken the classes yourself?
Oh, I have. Last year, oh, yeah, I'm a participating student. That's the funny thing is actually one of my friends pointed out to me. She said, you never eat on the tours in the summer when I'm hosting a tour. Our hosts never eat because we're doing all of the instructing and the guiding and information. But this one, I'm just showing up. I coordinate it. I put it all together. I'm an active participant because I am just as eager to learn as anybody else.
Yeah. And have you discovered a new favorite wine?
I did, actually. In our first class we did South American wines, and I had some Connoisseur. And the Connoisseur Sauvignon Blanc is one of my favorites. I really enjoy that, and I actually seek that out in the liquor stores now. And I learned about that wine. The first time I had it actually was at the Rookery. When I first went there, the very first time I went there, and it just sort of resonated with me. But I also learned a lot about Malbec. So the South American wines were really fun because it was something totally outside the norm. We did French and Italian last year as well, but we added them in again because we're doing different wines, different regions, and we just barely scratched the surface on those areas. And those countries are very stringent about their wine production and labeling and sale. And so it's really fascinating to learn about.
We've only got a little bit of time left, so mm-hmm. I just wanted to ask, when is the first class and what's the best place to find out more information?
The first class is this Friday at McGivney's downtown. We'll be meeting in the private owner's box. It is at 6:30. You can learn more about it at junofoodtours.com, or you can call me directly at 723-8478.
All right. Well, thanks, Midgey. These sound like great classes, and thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon today. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great Juno evening.